Try as I like to find the way, I can never get back by day, nor can remember plain and clear the curious music that I hear. If Daddy is dead, it will be up to me to look after this family. It was dusk of the day after the shooting. Francis was in the clear, thanks to the nurse who'd seen worse, but James was still missing. Mercedes was allowing the possibility of her father's death to surface in her mind. She was sitting on the veranda, watching the street and peeling a pomegranate. An extravagant impulse, purchased from an old West Indian woman on the corner of 7th Street. If Daddy is dead, I'll have to start teaching. I'll sell his tools. Mercedes was reassured by her logical train of thought, though a little startled by the caboose. If Daddy is dead, we'll be better off. She bit into the sweet wine cluster. If he isn't dead, for Mercedes had to face this possibility too, my job will simply be more demanding. By the time she discerned the outline of the Buick behind the headlights, Mercedes' plans were firm enough to withstand the recognition. She observed the car creep along in second gear, genuflecting at every pothole in the street, and her first thought was, I'll have to learn to drive. She folded her arms and watched as the car pulled into the driveway and jerked to a halt. As its lights died, she saw James's head loll back and his mouth fall open. A moment later, she heard him fumbling for many seconds with the door handle. It opened, and he got out. In the falling dark, she saw him descend slowly to his knees. He walked like that up the stone path to the veranda. The one thing Mercedes hadn't counted on was that her father might return a penitent. Such a thing might interfere with her plans. She had no energy left to be the daughter of a good man. She had only energy enough to be the head of this family. By the time he reached the steps and began to drag himself up them on all fours, she was near enough to hear the effort in his breath and realize that he was not penitential, but merely sick. She had assumed he didn't see her, so she jolted in her skin when he spoke. Hello, my dear. He was by now in a heap against the front door. Her reflexive mortification was replaced by the cool sense that it was just as well to have everything in the open between them. Yes, I watched you fall and did not stir to help. James raised his eyes and looked at her. His eyes had turned younger, bluer. Or maybe that was only an illusion created by his face having gotten older. Mercedes couldn't see that yet. All she saw was that his eyes looked young and half his face was in shadow. It wasn't until she saw him under electric light later that night that she realized it wasn't a shadow at all, at least not in the usual sense. She rose from her spare wooden chair and got her father into the dark house.
Daddy!
Lily swung wildly down the stairs, barefoot in her nightgown, and wrapped herself around him.
Daddy! My daddy!
Such a baby still. Mercedes tried to think it fondly. James patted Lily's head more awkwardly than usual.
You hurt your hands,
Lily cried, holding them in hers and feeling. His left one curled defenseless with its serrated knuckles, his right one strong but scabbed over at the palm.
I'll make some tea,
said Mercedes, gaining an inch in height en route from the front hall to the kitchen stove, shivering slightly at the unaccustomed breeze passing through the new spaces in her spine. James swayed a little with just Lily to hold him. It was time for him to fall again, but she didn't let him.
Watch out now.
Afraid he'd injure her.
It's all right, Daddy. Put your hand on my shoulder.
He resisted, preferring to teeter toward the wall. but she caught him round the middle and held him fast, guiding him to the living room, trusting her strong right leg. He found himself laid out for the second time in 2 days. Lily lifted his legs onto the couch and turned on the reading lamp. She saw at once the blow to him, and her tears welled. She sat by his side and placed her cool hand on his injured face. He closed his eyes, too exhausted not to allow himself the relief of tears. They formed between his long blonde lashes and rolled through the new hollows of his face.
"I love you, Daddy."
Mercedes arrived in the archway of the front room with the tea tray and stopped in the pool of light cast by the reading lamp. She fell through a crack in time without spilling a drop. When she returned, the tea was still piping hot, and Lily was exhaling the same warm breath across James's chest, where her head lay sleeping. James was stretched out on his back, asleep or comatose, and Lily had laid herself like a cool leaf alongside him, her right hand closed beneath his chin like a nighttime flower. James slept for most of the following week. When awake, he would eat a little of whatever Lily brought him, then listen while she read aloud. Fairy tales and Freud, until he was well enough to realize that he had lost interest in his old favorites, and preferred to have her read the Halifax Chronicle cover to cover. Things were getting interesting in Europe again. By the time Francis got home from the hospital, James was sitting up and whittling himself a cane. Lily and Mercedes had their hands full with 2 convalescents, but they thrived on it. And the patients themselves were angels, uncomplaining, appreciative, recovering. Mercedes could not remember a happier time, for even when Mama was alive, there had been a cloud, a constant threat of turbulence. But now, all is calm, all is bright. The only distressing thing about these halcyon days was James's tendency to talk about materia. It's normal to speak affectionately of the dead. But because it had been delayed for 14 years, Mercedes experienced it as something of a painful intrusion. She was grateful that he hadn't yet mentioned Kathleen. James carved the top of his cane into a dog's head and went for a slow walk with Lily. He started a new project out in his work shed. He picked up his shoemaker's tools again for the first time in many years. The work goes slowly. He is having to retrain himself around his bad left hand. And he won't say what he's making. The shed is off limits to everyone but Trixie. It's to be a surprise. All this and heaven, too. Until the day that Francis rises in the tub and Mercedes can no longer deny that her sister is still pregnant. Sisters of Mercy. The sisters will be ready when the time comes, Mercedes.
Thank you, Sister St. Monica.
Mercedes has conferred with Sister St. Monica in the geography classroom at Holy Angels, beneath the color print that still has pride of place over the blackboard. St. Monica, patron of mothers, scourge of African concubines. Have you discussed it with Francis?
Not yet, Sister. I'm concerned she may refuse to part with the child.
In that case, it's probably best not to discuss it with her.
That's what I thought.
There are other ways.
Kinder ways.
Quite right.
Wheels have been set in motion. 5 months from now, Francis will lie in at the convent infirmary at Mabu. Then the infant will be relayed to an appropriate orphanage.
That's a lovely print, Sister. Thank you, Mercedes.
It's time Mercedes had a talk with Lily.
Lily is 13. Mercedes had been going to delay the talk until the onset of menstruation, but it looks as though Lily is going to be late starting. Perhaps it's another sign. Perhaps she'll never bleed at all. That certainly would be an indication of God's favor. In any case, what with Francis's condition soon to be all too apparent, it's high time. Lily, do you know where babies come from?
They come from God.
They're in the kitchen making tea biscuits, arms powdered white to the elbows like ladies' opera gloves. Mercedes reddens.
That's right.
But God works through our flesh to create new life.
That's rather good.
Mercedes relaxes. This may not be so bad after all.
I know that, Mercedes,
says Lily, looking decently down at the dough beneath her fists.
How do you know?
Snaps Mercedes.
Francis told me.
This is going to be difficult after all. What did she tell you, Lily? Lily blushes a little, very prettily, too, and continues to knead the dough.
Well?
Mercedes is waiting.
It's a private thing, isn't it?
Says Lily, and she glances sideways, biting her lip.
Yes, it's very private. It's between two people and God.
Lily says nothing.
Lily, I'm not trying to make you feel ashamed or embarrassed. I just want to prepare you for certain wonderful things that will occur as you mature.
Lily's hands have kept working, but Mercedes has stopped and gone to the pump to hide her embarrassment. Lily answers with natural delicacy.
It's all right, Mercedes. I got my period for the first time last March, and Francis told me what to do.
So, what else is it not given me to know around here? Wonders Mercedes, pumping vigorously. Lily steals a look at her older sister. Suddenly she is aware of having hurt Mercedes' feelings. It hadn't occurred to her that Mercedes might feel left out of such a thing. It had only occurred to her that Mercedes might prefer to be left out. Lily would apologize, but feels that would only intensify her sister's humiliation.
Mercedes, is Francis really going to have a baby?
So she's told you.
Yes, but I wasn't certain it was true.
It's true. Mercedes rinses away all traces of flour and dough, then reaches for a cake of lye and asks,
Did Francis tell you how she came to be with child? Yes.
Lily is quite flushed by now, not with guilty knowledge, but with the delicate mortification of one whom it pains to trespass on the privacy of another. Mercedes scrapes a bristle brush over the moistened lye and scrubs her way from fingernails to elbows.
Well, what did she tell you, Lily?
Lily works the dough reverently, shaping it with care.
She told me that she became pregnant after the night she passed with Mr. Taylor in the mine.
Mercedes' hands are sterile. Lily continues with dignity.
But that she miscarried as a result of the shooting.
Mercedes turns off the pump with her wrist and holds her hands up, allowing them to drip dry toward the elbows. She asks, Then how does Francis explain her current condition? Lily answers,
The bullet,
and goes on molding the dough. Mercedes contaminates her hands with a clean tea towel, drying, drying, drying them.
She told you that in order to avoid telling you the truth, Lily. No, she believes it.
Mercedes pauses, folds the towel. Well, that's not how women get pregnant.
I know, Mercedes.
Mercedes has lost patience.
Well, will you tell me, then, what in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ on the cross it is you altogether do know of the factual acts of life?
Facts, Lily thinks but doesn't say. Instead, she removes her apron and leaves the kitchen, saying, "Excuse me." Mercedes is flummoxed. That girl is a cipher. Saint or no saint, why can't anyone in this house ever just have a straightforward conversation? Then she sees the sculpture. Modest penis and vagina in coital embrace, already beginning to sag owing to the dough being overworked. Francis, why did you tell Lily that story about the bullet?
Because it's true.
This is the last thing Mercedes expected to hear. She was ready for an obscene joke or another lie, not this. What Francis is this? The same strange one who rose from the tub the other day.
Do you really believe that, Francis?
Francis is bundled supine on a camp cot on the front porch, watching the afternoon street go by. Trixie is chasing moths in the yard. Francis does another un-Francis thing. She reaches out and takes Mercedes' hand. Francis's hand is warm. She smiles.
I'm happy, Mercedes. I'm happy.
Francis's smile is true. It contains the memory of all her other smiles, the false grins of a lifetime. Nothing has been banished from her face. But something immeasurable has been added.
Everything's going to be all right, Mercedes.
Mercedes squeezes Francis's hand and tucks the blanket up around her.
Don't worry, Mercedes. I'm not crazy.
I'm not worried.
Francis will always need me.
Don't be sad, Mercedes. I'm happy, dear.
And Mercedes smiles through tears as she smooths back the curls from her sister's brow.
Mercedes.
Yes, dear.
Don't be upset about Lily. She was too shy to say the words, so she made a sculpture.
You're right,
says Mercedes, serene, rising to leave.
Lily's a complete innocent.
Either that or she's possessed by the devil.
Mercedes turns sharply.
Just kidding, Mercedes.
And the white stripe appears across Francis's nose, momentarily ruffling Mercedes' best-laid plans.
When can you start, Mercedes?
I can start today, Sister St. Eustace.
Mercedes savors the wood-polished smell of the principal's office at Mount Carmel High School. The well-worn books ranged upon the shelves, Jesus on his varnished cross, broad oak desk with immaculate inkwell and pen, crisp memos scrolled into pigeonholes.
This is the type of office Mercedes would like someday. Someday I will cut off all my hair and enter the convent. I will teach, or perhaps I will join a contemplative order.
Mercedes nips this fantasy in the bud, for it strikes her that her whole family would have to be dead or married before she herself could become the bride of Christ. And since marriage is extremely unlikely for any of them, her dream is tantamount to wishing them all dead. Or no, Francis could come with me as an invalid, couldn't she?
How is Francis?
Oh, she's grand, Sister St. Eustace. Hale and...
Is she going to keep the child?
Mercedes is flustered at the frankness of the question, even though she does not delude herself that the whole of Cape Breton Island is not fully apprised of the latest Piper scandal.
Well, I think... I should say, quite possibly, Francis may decide to put it up for adoption.
Really?
Mercedes feels suddenly hot beneath the glare of Sister St. Eustace's spectacles.
Why? I haven't done anything wrong.
Sister continues.
God works in mysterious ways. Francis might finally come into her own, raising a child.
Oh, quite possibly, Sister. Without a doubt.
Mercedes smiles and knows she is lying, but is uncertain how to frame it as a confession of sin this Sunday. For is it one?
Yes, and no. My head hurts. Shall I proceed to the grade ones, sister?
Yes. Mercedes rises.
Thank you, Sister St. Eustace.
But Sister St. Eustace has returned to her paperwork. James is enjoying his retirement. The wing-back chair is surrounded by a growing turret of books. This is his other project, along with the secret one in the shed. He has opened the last of the crates and emptied the shelves of all the books he never had time to read. First, he counted them all. 103. Then he began stacking them in the order in which he intends to read them, the last ones forming the foundation. It is a slow, ruminative process. He knows what he intends to read first, however, and has set it aside accordingly for the pinnacle of his wall. Dante's Paradiso. Having gone through Inferno years ago, he has decided to cheat and skip over Purgatorio, eager for the beatific vision and the reunion with Beatrice. He rests now from his labors, in his chair behind his partially constructed parapet of words, and allows his mind to drift in place. His capable eldest daughter making things go, his wild middle daughter settling down to raise her colored child. Oh, yes, he hasn't forgotten that. He has simply forgotten how such a thing was ever able to call murder into his heart, the birth of an innocent child. And Lily, my consolation. He is startled from his reverie by the distant boom of a cannon. Lily is standing beside his chair, combing his hair.
It's okay, Daddy.
What?
It's 11 o'clock.
But James is still bewildered.
In the morning.
Lily gathers up a lock of his hair and begins to braid it, explaining gently,
It's Remembrance Day.
Oh.
They observe 2 minutes' silence together. Then James calls in his voice that is faded to straw,
Francis.
Francis and Trixie enter slowly.
Yes, Daddy.
Play something, my dear.
What would you like me to play?
Any old thing.
She starts. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home.
That's lovely.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. At 4:30, Mercedes arrives home from her first day as a schoolteacher to witness the latest phenomenon. Francis playing the maple leaf rag while Daddy dozes in his chair, his head sprouting a mass of tiny braids. Francis breaks off from playing and leaves.
I'll get supper, Mercedes.
Mercedes has no objection. Francis has recently revealed a natural talent in the kitchen. She cooks and cooks. Roasts and curries, stews and casseroles. It's mystifying. Francis is like one of those strange persons who awake one morning and play the complete works of Bach with never a lesson.
Daddy,
says Mercedes. He uncrinkles his eyes and blinks in several directions before focusing on her. She's standing over him with a brown paper package.
This came for you.
She deposits it in his lap and leaves. James looks at the postmark. New York City. The address is written in a spidery hand. Old lady-ish. He notes with relief that it is not the same hand that formed the infamous letter of years ago. Who could it be, then? It takes him a while to undo the strings. Inside is a lavender note folded on top of a bundle wrapped in white tissue paper. Supper. Mercedes takes her seat at the head of the table. Lily places a platter of kibanea in the center, followed by a bowl of tabbouleh, a brimming casserole of stuffed kusa, and a pot of bezella and rose. Mercedes unfolds her napkin and wonders where Frances learned to cook, or not cook, as the case may be, their mother's food. The kibbeh looks just like Mama's, except that in the center there is the impression not of a cross, but of a jack-o'-lantern grin.
Frances?
Yes, Mercedes.
Oh, never mind.
James's slow foot is heard in the hall, together with the syncopated clunk of his cane. He makes his way into the kitchen and over to his chair at the end of the table opposite Mercedes. Mercedes catches Francis's eye, but Francis doesn't register anything unusual. Oh, for Pete's sake.
Daddy,
says Mercedes.
What's that?
Nothing.
Fine. Let him eat with his hair in braids. Whom does it injure? Better than provoking a scene at table, as in the bad old days.
They say grace.
James does not express surprise at the Lebanese feast spread out before him. He presses his portion of kibbeh flat with his fork, drizzles it with olive oil, tears off a bite-sized piece of flatbread, wraps a bite of kibbeh in it, and eats. Modestly, the way he always has, even when he worked in the pit, aware of how intimate an act eating is.
"You've outdone yourself, Francis," he says. "It's every bit as good as your mother's."
Mercedes knows she ought to be glad, but this strange new peace between Daddy and Francis unnerves her.
"Thank you, Daddy,"
Francis replies, pulling up her chair. "I've learned by watching."
"Then you've got a photographic memory. That's a sign of genius."
Mercedes' eyebrows approach the ceiling. "Let's just say it's been a day full of surprises." She picks up her fork and gingerly tastes the kibbeh. "It is more than delicious. It's as though Mama were here." Mercedes closes her eyes for a moment in reminiscence of a precious time she knows could not have been. When Mama was alive and we were all so happy. When was that time? Where was that country? Rain begins to drizzle against the kitchen window. Francis lifts the lid from the steaming pot of bezella and rose, and Mercedes remembers. It was during the war. In the kitchen with Mama and the old country. So happy. Mercedes opens her eyes again.
"What's wrong, Mercedes?"
"Nothing at all, Lily." Mercedes permits herself to relax a little. She leans back in her chair and observes with satisfaction the flawless table manners of her family. She basks in their warm but civilized conversation. Everyone, it seems, has had an interesting day. Francis apportions second helpings. Lily reaches with her napkin and removes a spot of food from the left corner of James's mouth. A small service for which neither thanks nor embarrassment is required. All quiet at the kitchen table. Francis pours boiling water into the teapot, and Mercedes is alarmed to notice James catch sight of himself in the kettle, bristling with braids. The right side of his mouth breaks into a smile big enough to make up for the left side having lost the knack, and he laughs so hard that he falls dangerously silent between wheezy exhalations. Francis and Lily laugh too, until their throats ache and the tears stream, elbows thunking onto the table, rattling the cutlery. Even Mercedes joins in, and once started is unable to stop even after the others have recovered, then caught it again from her. Exhausted, they fortify themselves with a pan of succulent Nellie's muffins straight from the oven. They sip tea. Listen to the rain. Outside, the whole world is hungry and forlorn. But in here is a little island of contentment.
At last, Mercedes thinks. We are a family. Daddy is senile. Francis is crazy. Lily is lame and I'm unmarried. But we are a family. Soon to be one more.
And for the first time, it crosses Mercedes' mind to keep Francis's child.
Certain effects.
Francis, said James after the glorious Lebanese supper, come here. I have something for you.
Francis joined him in the front room. She sat on the piano bench, and he handed her the white tissue paper bundle.
What's this?
One or two things that belong to your sister Kathleen.
Then he left the room.
Francis fishes a new candle from a kitchen drawer. She walks up the attic stairs, where the voices are louder than ever. She pauses, wishing they would speak one at a time and stop yelling.
I'm listening, she says.
But the hollow din rages on, so she continues up. Now she and Trixie sit on the floor of the attic with the lighted candle. Frances looks down at the bundle in her lap. She parts the tissue folds. Lying on top of a soft pile is an old exercise notebook. The cover is imprinted with the Union Jack, the flag of Nova Scotia, and the crest of Holy Angels Convent School. In a space marked Name, a grandiose signature spells Kathleen Piper. And in the space marked Subject, in equally florid strokes, La Vie en Rose. Francis picks up the notebook, turns to the last page first, and reads,
Oh, diary, my loyal friend, there is love, there is music, there is no limit, there is work, there is the precious sense that this is the hour of grace when all things gather and distill to create the rest of my life. I don't believe in God, I believe in everything, and I am amazed at how blessed I am.
Then Francis turns back to the first page and begins.
8 p.m., February 29th, 1918, New York City. Dear Diary, No, I will not use that form of address. That is a relic of childhood. This book will serve as a record of my progress as a singer. I will record only relevant facts, which will prove useful as my training progresses. No gush.
Wax drips from the guttering candle stub by the time Frances arrives once more at the last page. She closes the diary.
Good night, Kathleen.
She turns her attention to what remains in the tissue paper package. Then she opens the hope chest. The next day, James joins Francis on the veranda.
Are you warm enough?
Yes, thanks, Daddy.
But he has brought an old tartan blanket and spreads it over her and Trixie anyway.
There.
He sits to the right of her on a kitchen chair next to her camp cot. He looks off at nothing in particular and starts talking.
I went down to New York because I got a letter.
Francis doesn't interject. She doesn't look at him. She knows he will fly away if she does that, so she relaxes and listens to his story.
It was the day of the armistice. I got off at Grand Central Station, and I walked all the way to where she was staying because I couldn't get a cab. There were crowds. I didn't know the war had ended.
He trails off. They sit still and silent for a long, comfortable time, until he says to the middle distance,
Well, it's time I did a tap of work.
He picks up his cane and shuffles off to the shed. Trixie follows. It takes 6 days. Mercedes leaves them each morning on the veranda, and every afternoon she sees them when she returns up the street. It's as though they hadn't moved, although Lily assures her that they have been duly fed and watered. They look so peaceful, sitting side by side, with their eyes settled on separate pieces of sky.
like old friends, Daddy and Francis. Mercedes would like to sit and chat with an old friend, but she doesn't have one. She had Helen Fry. And most of all, she had Francis. Where is Francis now? Mercedes can see James's lips moving as she approaches. What is he telling Francis, day after day? He has always fallen silent by the time Mercedes is within earshot. Walking home from school up Water Street on the chill 17th of November, Mercedes can see his breath. He is talking and talking. But by the time she reaches the veranda, his words have given up their steamy ghosts. She greets them as usual on her way into the house, and finally hears something. "How did the babies get in the creek, Daddy?" Mercedes freezes on the threshold, then walks briskly into the hall and, without removing her coat, runs up the stairs to her room. She leans against her door, slips a hand inside her blouse, and feels for her opal rosary. James reaches out his curled left hand without looking. He finds Francis's head and bonks it, saying kindly by way of answer, "That's all over and done with." "I was there," says Francis. "Wasn't I?" James rises. "Think I'll do a tap of work," and makes his slow way to the shed. His story is done. Francis stays looking at the sky in 15 shades of gray. Benny Lvovitz takes James and Lily out in a sleigh and helps James cut down just the right tree. On her way home from school, Mercedes opens McIsaac's jingle bell door to find Francis sucking on a cinnamon stick, chatting and chortling with the old man, who's nursing a ginger beer. He looks up. "Merry Christmas, Mercedes." His shelves are not as full as they were in better days, but he reaches down a dusty box of peanut brittle.
"Thank you, Mr. McIsaac."
"It won't be long now, eh?"
"What's that?" asks Mercedes.
"The great event."
Mr. McIsaac looks at Francis and beams. Mercedes stuffs the candy into her school bag, saying, "Come, Francis, time to go home." She forgets to buy the headache powders that she went in for. Mercedes takes Francis's arm and sets a rapid pace down Plummer Avenue, past shop windows with nothing for sale but empty space. For lease, for lease, for lease. At least there are no prying eyes behind those counters. Francis wants to pop in to Lvovitz's to buy raisins for mincemeat.
"I'll get the raisins, Francis. You go on home. It's cold."
"No, I'd like to say hi."
Mercedes has the exact change ready in her hand, but Mrs. Lvovitz sets out a stool for Francis, saying,
"When it's your time, Tyre, you call me,"
and offers her expert opinion as to the sex of the infant.
"You're carrying high, so probably it's a girl. Or maybe just an extra smart boy."
Mrs. Lvovitz winks. Francis smiles and asks, "How's Ralph?" Mercedes picks up a tin of magic baking powder to avoid Mrs. Lvovitz's mortifyingly considerate glance in her direction. Mrs. Lvovitz hesitates, then produces a photograph of the world's most perfect grandson, Jean-Marie Lvovitz. Francis hoots.
"He's got the sticking out ears."
"What are you saying, sticking out ears? I'll sticking out ears you."
But Francis laughs, and so does Mrs. Lvovitz. Mercedes holds her head up and comes to the counter. She glances at the photo, then looks straight at Mrs. Lvovitz and says politely, "Congratulations." Finally outside, Mercedes says, "It's probably best that you not leave the house these days, Francis. It's too cold for you to be out traipsing. You'll catch your death." Francis doesn't answer. She turns up 9th Street.
"Francis?
Where on earth? Oh, good Lord.
Francis knocks on Helen Fry's door. Mercedes watches from the darkness of the street as the door opens, and Helen appears in the square of light. Francis turns sideways, setting off her shameless silhouette, and looks back toward Mercedes as though waiting for her. Mercedes sees Helen slowly raise her hand in greeting, but Mercedes makes no move in reply. After a moment, Helen's hand drops once more to her side. Mercedes hears Francis say,
"Merry Christmas, Helen."
Francis rejoins Mercedes in the street, and they turn homeward again. Francis slips an arm through Mercedes. Mercedes shivers. At home, Daddy and Lily have begun decorating the tree.
"This time next year, there'll be a wee holy terror crawling under the tree," says James, painstakingly threading a kernel of popcorn.
Francis starts baking. In the front room, Mercedes catches sight of a check on the piano, made out by James in his wavery handwriting to Our Lady of Mount Carmel Relief Fund. 3 zeros. She crumples it up and tosses it into the fire. Bootleg money or no, this family cannot survive on a female junior teacher's salary. Daddy may wish to ease his conscience by giving away his ill-gotten gains, but Mercedes puts the welfare of her family first. Someone's got to. Immediately after supper that evening, Mercedes pleads homework and a headache and retires upstairs. A small lie. It's not her head that hurts. Once in her room, she switches off the light and lies fully clothed on her bed. She can hear Christmas carols from downstairs, Francis at the piano, singing along with Daddy and Lily, "God rest you, merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay." Tears fill Mercedes' eyes. It is not fair that Francis should bask in Daddy's affection and the approval of sundry shopkeepers for something that ought to have her hiding her face in shame. It is not fair that Sister St. Eustace managed to make Mercedes feel like the bad one, when everyone knows that she's the good one. It is not fair that Francis will have a baby, while Mercedes was denied a husband. None of it is fair, but that is not why Mercedes is weeping freely against her pillow. She does not begrudge Francis the new affection she has inspired on all sides. Mercedes was the first to love Francis, after all. She knows she could even find the strength to bear the mortification of raising the child. But she cannot bear to lose Francis, and that's what hurt this evening on their walk home. The new Francis is no longer a wayward child, or even a scarlet woman. The new Francis is at home everywhere, especially in her own growing body, and does not lack for friends. Everyone seems to think that motherhood is the best thing that could possibly happen to her. Everyone but Mercedes. For she knows that once Francis has a child, Francis will no longer need a mother. Mercedes covers her face with her arm and allows her heart to open up along its oldest wound.
Where will my baby Francis go?
She will disappear. She will die, and I'll have no one to love and look after. Little Francis will become a forlorn ghost child, crying on the stairs at night, cold and transparent with her fuzzy golden braids and her brave stare.
It doesn't hurt.
And I won't be able to comfort her. Mercedes cries until she is dry and empty once more. Then she rises and sits on the edge of her bed. Downstairs, they're singing O Holy Night. She reaches into the drawer of her night table, finds a fresh hanky, and blows her nose. She rebraids her hair in the dark. There. Don't whine. Fix it. January gales freeze the ocean waves mid-crest,
Pine trees tinkle in their glass dresses, and it's warm inside. Hitler appointed chancellor. Lily is scanning the headlines for James.
There's going to be another war, he says,
and adds another book to his wall. Francis bellies up to the piano and plays My Wild Irish Rose.
Sing, Lily,
says James, dropping into the wing-back chair. Upstairs, Mercedes studies by correspondence with St. Francis Xavier University, upgrading her earning power. February will never end, but never mind. Lily holds the newspaper at the proper distance from James's new glasses so he can make out the photograph. Chancellor Hitler and His Holiness Pope Pius XI, shaking hands.
Yup, says James. You watch.
And he drops off suddenly to sleep the way he does now. March comes in like a lion. Franklin D. Roosevelt inaugurated president. Do you want to see the picture, Daddy? Together they look at the photograph of the tall, bespectacled man standing on a hustings, swagged in the stars and stripes, waving. Pledges to put America back on its feet. April Fool's Day. The morning sun floods through the attic window. Diphtheria rose, says Francis. Lily hands her the tattered, still pretty doll. Francis holds Dippy Rose over the open hope chest and recites, Golden lads and girls all must, as chimney sweepers come to dust. Francis lays her next to Spanish influenza, typhoid and TB ahoy, smallpox, scarlet fever, and Maurice. Trixie and Lily look on reverently. On the floor next to the open hope chest, the baptismal gown is laid out. Music, please, Lily. Lily winds up the old-fashioned girl and sets her down to turn on the floor, her head balanced prettily on her hand. She tinkles, Let me call you, sweetheart. I'm in love with you. Trixie follows the figurine with her eyes, ready to pounce should it stray from its circumference. Francis picks up the baptismal gown and lays it gently over her dolls. Next time I open this box, it will be to dress my baby in this gown. And to get your dolls again. No. Francis moves to lower the lid, but Lily stops her halfway. You forgot this, Francis. That's yours, Lily. The photograph of Kathleen. The one that Mercedes kept in Jane Eyre until Lily tore the book apart. It seems so long ago. Lily contemplates it for a moment. Mama is in the background, in the window. What's that in Mama's hand? Lily asks. Scissors. She's waving. Yes. Her eyes still on the photograph, Lily sucks in her upper and lower lips by slow turns, releasing them gently through her teeth. This picture belongs to Mercedes, she says finally. No, it doesn't. I don't want it. Lily looks away. She's pretty, isn't she? Lily doesn't say anything, doesn't look up. She's your mother, Lily. The old-fashioned girl has stopped turning, but Trixie keeps watch just in case. Francis continues gently, She died. It wasn't your fault. Lily sits very still and listens, veiled by her hair, which she has been wearing loose of late. It sweeps to the floor around her like a curtain of fire. She went to New York, says Francis. She was an opera singer. Something happened there. Daddy brought her home. She lay in this room and never said a word. Ambrose drowned in the creek. It was an accident. You didn't drown. You got polio instead. I was there.
The more Frances tells, the more she remembers, as though it were all parked, waiting behind the flimsiest of stage scenery, a scrim, perhaps, and suddenly exposed by a trick of light, the countryside dissolving to reveal the battlefield, present all along.
The night you were born. I don't know why I brought you to the creek. I loved you. It wasn't because I didn't love you. I carried you into the water. I held you, and I prayed.
Frances strokes her belly, feeling for a kick inside, but it's all quiet.
Did you baptize Ambrose, too?
Yes. They sit for a long moment together, not talking, breathing in the soft cedar cloud. Frances puts the old-fashioned girl back in the hope chest, then turns and looks at Lily, who is growing up.
Lily, if you want to ask me something, I'll tell you the truth.
Lily has dropped the photograph of the laughing girl. She looks up.
Ambrose loves you, Frances.
Frances takes Lily's hand and places it against her belly.
Here, you can feel him. He's awake now.
Lily feels the ripple. She presses her ear against the site.
What do you hear, Lily? The ocean.
The car horn blasts outside. Mercedes has learned to drive. Frances and Lily go to the window and wave down. Daddy is standing by the car, leaning on his cane. He smiles up. Lily turns away from the window, intending to close the hope chest before going downstairs, but she sees that Frances has already done so. She pauses at the top of the stairs and says,
"Are you coming, Frances?"
Frances turns and goes directly to join her sister at the top of the stairs. No need to close the hope chest, for she sees that Lily has done so already. It's a lovely day for the drive to Mabu. Frances would rather have had her baby here at home with Mrs. Lvovitz, but she relented because it seemed to mean so much to Mercedes.
They're equipped for emergencies, Frances. It's safer even than going into hospital. Please, dear, if only for my sake.
James stands holding the passenger door open. Mercedes pulls on a pair of kid gloves as Frances climbs in beside her.
Frances, I have to tell you a secret.
What?
I'm pregnant, too.
Mercedes' smile trembles for a moment, then she bursts out in a high-pitched giggle.
April Fool!
The car lunges in reverse down the driveway. Frances watches her sister's laughing profile and reflects that Mercedes has been under a strain.
Blue dress.
Daddy and Lily are very happy together at home alone. It's so peaceful. 3.5 weeks pass. Lily doesn't realize the extent of James's latest limitations until he starts to smell a bit rank. She helps him into the bath once a week. She lays out fresh underwear daily and bleaches the rest. Fresh and clean. She checks on him if he's too long in the toilet. He sometimes falls asleep there. She tidies him, then wakes him up. He still spends an hour a day working in the shed, but he misses Trixie's company. They haven't seen her since Frances left. Lily expects Trixie to show up at the foot of Frances's bed in Mabu. Meantime, Lily has had to put mouse traps in the cellar and kitchen. On April 25th, the telegram arrives. It's a boy, stop. Coming home Wednesday, stop. Lily and Daddy toast the new arrival with milk. They consider a battery of names. Isidore, Ignatius, Malcolm, Rupert, Bingo, George, Sebastian, Christopher,
Pius, Leif, Horace, Romulus, Patrick, Pierre, Cornelius, Michael, Alec, Eustochium, Felix, Augustus, David, and decide on all of them. Until Lily comes up with Aloysius, which seems to say it all.
"Aloysius," says James. "Aloysius. Yes."
"Aloysius," replies Lily. The 1st of May, month of Immaculate Mary. Lily is still in her white dress and headgear from the noon procession up Plummer Avenue to the church. It seems an appropriate outfit in which to greet her sisters and her new nephew. She has strewn the stone path to the house with Queen Anne's lace and daisies. "Welcome home," in Gothic script, hangs from the veranda eaves. In the kitchen, bread sculptures cool on the table. Madonna and the Infant of Prague, and a Pietà. She has prepared a feast. A roast cooked the size of a wallet with raw turnip slices, cranberry sauce, baked potatoes, the two that failed to detonate in the oven, tea biscuits and molasses. Date squares, pits in. Upstairs, Lily of the Valley exhale on Francis's pillow. All is in readiness. Last but not least, a big blue cake with white writing. "Happy birthday, Aloysius." The morning rain has turned to evaporating diamonds in the afternoon heat. Lily has had her eyes peeled on the street for the past 3 hours. "Here they come!"
James joins her on the veranda. As soon as the car gets within range, Lily waves and runs back into the house to get the new camera. She gets a shot of the car as it turns into the driveway. Mercedes is waving now, too, but in the background, Frances is, of course, more concerned with the bright blue bundle at her breast. Click. The car pulls to a stop. Mercedes' hand goes up to her window. Click. The driver's side opens. Click. Mercedes steps out, still waving. Click. She runs up the path to Lily, click, 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 and grabs the camera, jerking Lily's head forward at the same time because the new camera comes with a strap. She hisses at Lily, "Not a word, do you hear me? Not a word." Mercedes glances up to include James in this proviso, but he's on his way down the steps with his cane, walking to meet Francis, who has stopped halfway up the flowered path. Mercedes moves to overtake him, but "No, Mercedes," says Lily. Mercedes is surprised, but she obeys, understanding that Lily is up to something saintly. James reaches Francis, puts out his arm for her, and she takes it. Together, they walk to the house. Frances is wearing a sky-blue dress to go with the darker blue bundle she cradles with her free arm. When they reach the foot of the veranda, Lily sees that it is not a bundle at all, but Frances's breasts, huge and leaking, staining her pale dress a royal blue. By evening, Frances is still asleep upstairs on her bed, her face crushing heavy scent from the lily of the valley. In the lower reaches, the decorations are down. They have eaten no supper. Mercedes consents to a cup of tea.
"The birth went smoothly."
Mercedes lifts her cup, but her hand shakes so badly that she sets it down again on the kitchen table.
"Francis was very brave. The sisters said it was though she felt no pain."
Lily and James wait for her to continue.
"It was a boy. He was, of course, quite dark and very healthy."
"You saw him," says James.
Mercedes nods and the tears come.
"He was beautiful. A beautiful baby with a lusty cry."
She smiles a little at the recollection.
"Did you hold him?"
Lily asks. Mercedes nods yes.
"Did Francis?" He took to the breast right away. There was no problem.
Mercedes catches James's eye and he looks down, shaking his head.
What happened to him?
Lily is confused. She seems to be the only one who doesn't understand.
Mercedes turns to her and explains tenderly, He just died, Lily. Sometimes it happens. A baby just dies in its sleep. They don't know why.
James nods, his mouth tightening. He says in a would-be matter-of-fact voice, Crib death. That's what happened to the first Lily.
Other Lily?
That's right, says James, rising to leave. Was he baptized?
Mercedes nods, starting to cry again. As James shuffles past, he bonks each of them affectionately on the head with his bad hand and says without looking,
Night-night, girls.
Good night, Daddy.
He shambles from the room. They hear him clear his throat once or twice when he reaches the hall.
Mercedes puts forth a hand and strokes Lily's hair. Sometimes, if a child is very special, God might choose to spare it the pain and temptations of this world, and take it straight to him. What was wrong with him?
Lily is suspicious.
Why, nothing, Lily. He was perfect. You said he was special. Yes, specially beloved of God. That means there was something wrong with him. He was crippled.
He wasn't crippled.
I don't believe you. Lily, look at me.
Mercedes continues gently.
I have some nice news, too.
Lily waits, not trusting. Mercedes takes Lily's hand and leans forward.
While I was at Mabu, I saw the bishop. He'd like to have a talk with you.
Lily looks up.
What for? He wants to hear about your visions. You mean Ambrose? Yes, and other things. What other things?
Lily's hand cools and moistens in response to Mercedes' gathering warmth.
Your special way with the sick and the lost. Who? The veterans, for example. And Francis. And Daddy.
Mercedes' eyes have begun to shine, giving Lily the old creepy feeling of being a front for some figure situated immediately behind her, a figure she knows will disappear no matter how suddenly she turns.
And your special knowledge of God's plan.
The soft fur at the nape of Lily's neck stirs. She can no longer resist. She turns around in her chair, but there is no one behind her. Nothing to see but the oven, standing where it has always stood.
What are you looking at, Lily? Nothing. I thought I heard something.
Mercedes' gaze follows Lily's to the oven. And now the filaments at the back of Mercedes' neck likewise bristle to life.
What does he want?
Asks Lily, turning round again.
Who? The bishop.
He wants to interview you,
to find out if God has a special plan for you. How's he going to find that out? By listening to you tell your story. And Lily, this is the most wonderful part. You know how I've been saving so that we could go to Lourdes for your 14th birthday?
Lily waits.
Well, God has provided. There's more than enough money for us to go together and to stay as long as it takes to petition Our Lady for a cure.